Friends, as the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our talk is where shall we look for help? This speaker herself has pointed out the philosophical answer, but we seated it. Before we find out the answer actually given by HVP, let's see the present scenario. Whatever statements the student is going to make are not meant to hurt anybody's feelings. The statements are being made on basis and facts. Therefore, please forgive me. It's not meant to hurt anybody's feelings. What is happening today? What do we see around? We see around that in spite of the technological and scientific advancement, which has to a great extent weaned away intelligentsia from the orthodox church, orthodox religions. But yet, what has happened is, except the rationalists, the materialists, agnostics, or atheists, all other people, majority of mankind, is still in the clutches of superstitions and rituals of various ceremonies, unfortunately. Even in India, if you look, scientific men, technologically, academic qualification, they are all great people heading the institutions of research and other things. But yet, as far as religion is concerned, they have a closed mind completely. Religion is separate from them. They don't apply the logic or reasoning mind at all. One, for instance, for the sake of fear that what might happen if we don't do it. Or the other is, as far as religion is concerned, it is a separate entity. My fathers have been doing, my forefathers have been doing, let me also do it. Blind. Now today, as long as the life is smooth for the person, then everything is having very easy, cushy time, cushy job, and everything is fine. It's okay. The man does not even sit for a while and think, why is he here? What is there any purpose in life? Where are we going? Why should other people suffer like this? Although I am quite happy. Well, he doesn't have time to think about this. The moment something happens to his family, some tragedy sets in, or somebody is seriously ill, or even, you see, he loses his job, suddenly he loses a lot of money in the business, suddenly he will think about God, perhaps he will go to not only the God of his community, but all he'll try to uproot all the gods and goddesses everywhere. See, this is what is happening. See, without understanding that he is reaping the effects, the causes he has himself sown earlier, this is what is happening today. You go and see it everywhere. Only unfortunately, the student of theosophy finds it very difficult where to go. Although in his hearts of hearts, he has looked to his higher self. Now the thing is, look, even otherwise, during the month of March, April and May, you go and sit at Prabhati, what is happening. The students, boys and girls, parents, go there to break coconuts and to bargain or to bargain with Ganesha. Let my son get pass the examination, daughter pass the exams. Unfortunately, they don't realize that Ganesha is not going to correct your answer papers. If only instead they could study well, and then that Ganesha is certainly going to help you in terms of buddhi quality. It's in each and every one of us. Now, what's happened? You see, you go and see Balaji temple in Tirupati. Every day, you see, the collection is somewhere between 20 and 25 crores in terms of currency and coins only. I'm not joking, you can go and see. This is official estimate given by the state government. And then, you see, this is without or excluding the jewelry put there. Many people who are ill or the husband is not well, seriously ill. Then the wives go there and put their thali at the Mangal Sutra and Ruti. The student has seen. And then some people, suppose the leg is not all right, they will put silver leg in the thing as a barter. Unfortunately, the statistics do not include the failures. Only successes are given. We have no right to condemn anybody. You see, maybe due to faith. But everything must happen within the ambit of the law, great law of karma. Can anything, you see, escape the law of karma? Have you committed a sown a seed, you have to willingly reap. This they don't realize. You know, various things are there by which a man is drawn to these things. It's happened. It's happening today. But now, what is the explanation for this by theosophical literature or by theosophical literature? In the section in the Treatise of Theosophy where she talks about God and prayer, the Christian, inquired of the Christian, Westerner, he asked, H.P. Blavatsky, do you believe in prayer? And she says, we don't, as you believe. That is, pray to a personal anthropomorphic God. We do believe in prayer. There is silent, unuttered prayer to our Father in secret. Then the student asks, then you see, we are also doing the same thing, addressing to the Father in heaven. That is, to Jesus Christ, to subdue our passions and desires. Then HVP points out, look, what kind of prayer you have? When you are ill, you go and pray, and then especially a murderer and a worse criminal can at the deathbed if he gets communion, his free ticket to heaven is assured. He is forgiven. This kind of vicarious atonement has ruined, morally ruined people. Then he says, then when world do theosophists look for help? Then the answer is given. The answer, to his higher self, the divine spirit of the God within, and to his karma. Then she explains there, what is this higher self and what is this karma? They are not different, they are one and the same. On page 133, she points out, she is defining the various principles in man. Atma, the higher self, is universal, neither yours nor mine. Then, buddhi, the spiritual soul, is only its vehicle. Neither each separately nor the two collectively are of any more use to the body of man than the sunlight and its beams, however potent they may be on their own plane, unless the divine being, Atma-buddhi, is assimilated by and reflected within some consciousness. That consciousness is manas. Neither Atma nor buddhi are ever reached by karma. Please note that. Because Atma, the former Atma, is the highest aspect of karma. It means the higher self itself is an agent of karma. He is karma. Then defining what is his higher self, elsewhere she points out, she says, the higher self is Atma, inseparable ray of the universal and one self. It is the God above, more than God within. Happy the man who succeeds in saturating his inner ego with it. It is higher self is nothing but Atma, assimilated with buddhi and manas. Now once you have understand that there is no difference between Atma and karma in one sense, because the working agent of Atma is karma. Now let's look at the reading we had today. The chapter is known as Raja Vidya, Raja Guhya Yoga, devotion by means of the kingly knowledge and kingly mystery. It starts with Krishna speaks, unto thee who findeth no fault. This is a very important thing to understand, this phrase, unto thee who findeth no fault. No fault with what? The peace who has no doubt, anusuyave, one who has no enemy. That's a literal translation. But it also means one who has no doubt at all about what. When you are going to listen to a guru, spiritual guru, you have to have two or three things in your mind. You should have faith in the teacher. You should have faith that the knowledge exists. That you should have patience, not to question anything, or should not be carping pity. It is one who has not got any criticism for anything, who is able to accept what is given to him as spiritual teaching, and then who is able to assimilate it. The knowledge has to assimilate it, otherwise it will still remain in the mental pabulum only. It will not percolate even into your skin at all. Now this is important for us. Therefore, Anusuyiri, in one sense, who does not doubt the karmic law that operates everywhere, the law which reigns in the universe as the law of karma. Therefore, what comes to me is what I have created, the effect of what I have done, nothing more, nothing less. Therefore, he says, unto thee findeth no fault, I will now make known this most mysterious knowledge. Therefore, the precondition is absolutely faith in the law. We have a quotation there in your handout of reading. You see, the mysterious knowledge coupled with the realization, that is assimilation, which having known, thou shalt be delivered from evil. Very, very important. This is the royal knowledge, tingling mystery, a royal Rajavidya. Purifier, clearly comprehensible. Proof purifier. Purifier and it removal of the dross of the cross, lower self of ours. Not opposed to sacred law, easy to perform and inexhaustible. Those who are unbelievers in this truth, who are rather than first, they are born again and again. Then he talks about the whole universe being pervaded by his invisible form, invisible presence, that is, his sarvajna, all those things that are indicated. How the universe comes into being, that's also indicated. The revolution of Manvantara and Pralaya, etc. Hey, something important comes. We are only giving a few statements and explaining them. The deluded despised in human form. And then immediately it shows us being unacquainted with my real nature. Therefore, lack of understanding of real nature, what man is, in whom, that as an ego, Krishna is seated as an ego in the hearts of all beings. And the ego sits in the hearts of all beings, says in the 10th chapter. That's why, if whenever you are decrying another person, or abusing him, or defiling him, or mortifying your body, what are you doing? Deluded despisement human form. Manushim Tanumasitam. Then he says, but those of great soul, partaking of the godlike nature, knowing me to be the imperishable principle. Imperishable principle. Then worship me the center. Then he goes on. He is everything in the universe, that's what it says. I am the origin and the dissolution and the receptacle, the storehouse and the eternal sea. Then I am this, that and the other. Then I am death and immortality. Then finally he says, look here, those who worship me with certain motive or axe to grind, they have certain reward. And they go to the Indraloka, spend their time as much time as possible until their merit there towards the realm is exhausted. Then they come back. Then finally he says, but for those who thinking of me as identical with all, that is, that Krishna is seated in the hearts of all beings. The whole universe is the Krishna, the one divine principle. Constantly worship me, I bear the burden of the responsibility of their happiness. Yogakshemam with Pahami. Unfortunately, the motto of realized people also. What kind of a settlement they are doing and what welfare they are doing, they must ask, tell us. Then the whole point, what I am trying to say is that this one law, the one reality, is universally present. Ubiquitousness of the principle is evident here. Now, in the 18th chapter, we have that quotation in our handout. There dwelleth in the heart of every creature, the first one. O Arjuna, the master Ishvara, who by his magic power causeth all things and creatures to revolve, mounted upon the universal wheel of time, take sanctuary with him alone. The problem is, it's taken literally. That's the whole problem. O son of Bharata, with all thy soul, by his grace thou shalt obtain supreme happiness, the eternal peace. Master Ishvara with me. Forsake every other religion and take refuge alone with me. Grieve not, for I shall deliver thee from all transgressions. Who is that Krishna? Who says that you leave everything and come to me? You see the chap sitting in the Birla Mandir in Delhi? See, these are serious things which we have to reflect and assimilate. We are not decrying anybody. We have no right to do that. we have seriously asked, who is that Krishna? If we go to the 800 verses, 700 odd verses in the Gita, we should give us an integral whole meaning, not one isolated sloka and all that. The whole point, it talks about the universal consciousness, the one life, the one reality from which all of us have come, towards which we are all going. Humanity is an emanation from divinity and its return path there too. That one divine principle which pervades the entire universe. This is called in Tamil Kadavu, which means he is beyond everything. He has penetrated everything. That's the meaning of that word in Tamil. But that person, that Sarvajna, which is called one absolute principle in the whole universe. Now, you see, there are certain things we have to mention here, because we go to the actually to find out the source of man, so that to find out his nature, certain things we have to state here. In the oriental philosophy that HPP gives, psychology, she gives in the 10 items, in the Isis and which she says, nature is triune. Threefold. This is expanded as the sevenfold nature later on. Nature is triune. There is a visible, objective nature. An invisible, indwelling, energizing nature. It's not merely the phenomenal, objective universe. Behind that is the model, energizing nature. Exact model of Vyaja and its vital principle. And the above. These two, spirit, source of all forces, alone eternal and indestructible. The lower two constantly change, the higher thing does not. Therefore, there is spiritual, there is the astral arena, and then there is a physical phenomenon. Now, so also man is triune. Just like nature is triune, man is triune. He has the objective physical body, the vitalizing astral body, or soul, the real man, and these two are brooded over and illuminated by the third, the sovereign immortal spirit. Fine. There are two changing things, the visible and the invisible, and the spirit is also invisible. When the real man succeeds in merging himself with the latter, he becomes immortal. This is a very important statement. That is, immortality is conditional. Although the Krishna is in the hearts of all beings, we cannot take it for granted we are all immortal. See, the whole point is here he makes. When the real man successfully merges himself with the immortal entity, he becomes immortal. The same idea comes in secret doctrine also, where she says, she talks about triple line of evolution. The monadic spiritual, the manasic or the intellectual, supplied by the solar engines or agnishvata putris, and the chayas, physical, given by the lunar. There she says, about talk, monadic essence, she says, right. She talks about monad, saying it's not of this plane at all, it is actually from the spirit, spiritual world. This monad thrown down onto earth as a plank of salvation, please note every word, as a plank of salvation for the personality in which indwells, in which it indwells. It is for the latter, that is personalities, to cling to it. And thus partaking of divine nature, obtain immortality. Therefore, immortality is only conditional, it can be obtained, right? So it can be acquired by the personality clinging to the Atma. This is the meaning. Left to itself, the monad will cling to no one. And like the plant will be drifted away to other another incarnation by unresting current of evolution. But the important thing is the soul or the incarnated consciousness, which is unfortunately enmeshed in karma, has to raise himself above this karma and then make it pure karma so that he can ally himself with the divine prayer. Then only he can become immortal. Now, how does what is the nature of man? In order to understand the nature of man, you have to go to the fundamentals proposition. As we said earlier, the triple line of evolution is explained in the three fundamental propositions. H.P.B. talks about one absolute principle, which is absolutely attributeless. No attribute can be given. All the attributes that we give are only the actually the adjectives coined by the puny mind of ours. How can this finite mind comprehend anything of the nature of the absolute? Then it will cease to be absolute. Therefore, it is called in Sanskrit sat or Venus. But however, it's not Sunya. The absolute is not Sunya, please. It's because of the great seer's ecstatic vision, beautified vision, and which are the only answer to that is bowing in reverence and silence. Let's not understand it as absolute negation or Sunya. It is this real vital reality which can be sensed, which can be realized in our hearts, the form of our consciousness. This one reality, of course, which will be used as two abstract symbols, in fact, to understand the reality. Absolute abstract space, which represents the ideation aspect. The absolute abstract motion, one is space is subjectivity or the prakritic aspect, and the motion is the ideation aspect. The same thing comes because in manifestation we have to have two things, subject object, purusha prakriti. Therefore, what happens is matter serves us as a vehicle for the animating principle of the one reality. Therefore, in manifestation we have two poles. Subject to object, purusha prakriti, these are only two polarities or two poles of the same reality. And this is connected by the intelligent medium, which Hindus call as light of the logos or poha. Now once you have this, the whole universe, how do we understand this one reality in our daily life? It functions as a law in the universe. The universe itself is periodically become the playground for the appearance of numberless universes which appear and disappear, like a wink of an eye. Therefore, after a period of activity, equal period of rest in the unknown. Therefore, manvantaras and pralayas. This we are able to see in our daily life in terms of ebb and flow of tides, waking and sleeping, life and death, and the great universal law, par excellence. The law of time. All this what for? For the evolution and emancipation of human soul. Therefore, the third fundamental proposition says, yes, you see the whole universe comes into being in the one reality. We are emanation of the one reality, one universal oversoul, which itself is an aspect of that absolute, or the unknown. The best thing is unknown. Now, once you understand this, then she says, all of us, we have gone through the various forms of the lower kingdom, up to the animal. But during that evolution, what happens? There must be spirit. The monadic essence sleeps through all these things. It is not awake. You understand this, you see? Through the mineral, the vegetable, the animal, the plant, the vegetable, animal, etc. And then when it comes to human being, that angelic being, solar angels, wakes us up. They wake us up. We come to the reality that we can see outside and inside also. We have the power of choice. We choose to learn, to think, to act consciously. Therefore, from that point, we become conscious being and responsible for what we do. There is no moral responsibility attached to lower kingdom at all. Only when man comes to the scene, who has a power of choice to choose, to go on the right way or the wrong way, that he becomes morally responsible. And this power to choose to think enables him to experience in life, to gain garner experience through numberless series of transformations and incarnations and metamorphoses. What happens? The goal is the greatest archangel, Jnani Vidyas. And during this process, what happens? To live and reap experience and to cultivate this, he requires a mind with depth and breadth and points to draw it to the diamond soul. And this cannot be found out in Maya's realm, illusion. Therefore, voice inside points out, blend thy mind and soul. He also blend thy mind and soul. The soul is a spiritual soul. Mind is a mind caught up in the box of karma. Now, since he talks about a threefold man, now what happens is here, there are two things. The threefold can be shown as a sevenfold man. The four lower, that is physical body, astral body, prana and desire principle, constituting the personality. At the lower quaternary, which is changing, which is perishing all the time, which has a date of birth and therefore date of death. But the higher triad, Atmabuddhi Manas, is called the individuality that inheres in the vehicle provided. Is beautifully expressed in the 13th chapter Gita, where Mr. Chaitanya talks about, Krishna talks about the Kshetra and the Tetra. And any form in the universe has to have these two combinations, the body and soul. Animated by one, as we have in the 13th chapter, as the one sun illuminates the whole world, all of us are illuminated by this one reality. From that point, what happens? All of us are come from the reality. And having done our pilgrimage, we are purposely going through this pilgrimage of life through, yes, whatever we have learned. Through what? Using the quaternary, with the help of the higher, we are trying to transform ourselves from the karmatic beings, mahatmic beings. Because unfortunately what happens is, this karma becomes the middle principle. When it becomes the middle principle, the incarnated consciousness is enmeshed in karma. Therefore it becomes two, do it. The higher is the lower manas. The lower manas is caught in the webs of karma. Therefore it's ever dragging the man towards the animal level. But once he frees himself from the karmic tendencies and looks up to his heavenward to his parent, divine parent, he can ally himself with higher minds and buddhi. Then he will have a flash of intuition also. But from that point of view, man is doomed. Unfortunately, although we are all emanations from the Manasaputra, great Mahat, that higher manas, because of incompatibility of the vehicle in which it invests, it cannot fully operate here. However potent it may be on its own plane, it has to function in a vehicle compatible to astral. Because of this, it no sooner it inhabits this body of ours, it forgets its parentage. Because it forgets the parentage, that is, it thinks it's an animal being. Therefore, if it says in one place that is the fate of the consciousness standing on antaskarana is determined by two things. Whether it's going to gravitate towards its divine parent when he becomes a big Mahatma, or it's going to be pulled down by karma, lower passions and desires, when he becomes worse than animal. We find that man is dual in character. He can be Tao-like, he can be also tigerish. He is a devil incarnate, as well as God incarnate. He is unfolding God. Whole problem is, we don't realize that reality here, because we are being carried away by our lower senses, by our passions and desires, by our likes and dislikes, by our separated tendencies. The moment we think that with the corporate body, we are separate being from other beings. The moment you think like that, what happened? Yes, the fight has already started. The fight between the lower and the higher manas. The fight between the living and the dead. The living is the higher and the dead is the living, the changing things. We must realize this is the entire theme or keynote of the Gita. The very first verse says, what does it say? Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, Samaveda, Yusava, Vamaka Pandava Chaya, Kim Kuruvacha, Sanjaya. Says, we should read the English translation. Dhritarashtra, it's a blind man representing matter. What else can he do? Tell me, O Sanjaya, what the people of my party, Mamaka, and those of Pandu, finished. When you have the concept of mine and thine, the separate tendency has taken place. He will get confused. Naturally, he can't govern the body properly. Therefore, he has to have a governor. the Dhritarashtra. He will mind the Dhritarashtra. Then what happened? We are, instead of making it a place for dharma, where dharma has to be established, we have made it a, yes, land of works. Through our karma we obtain this body. And then how are you going to use the body? Are you going to submit ourselves to this selfishness, slavish tendencies, self, you see, other dependence? That's why man, unfortunately, because it's, whether it's due to lack of knowledge or due to having no time to go to scriptures himself, he needs a crutch. Somebody, pundit or somebody, or padri, to read out the scriptures to us. This is a folly of this modern society. Other dependence. See, we have shed our four legs and our shed our tail. We can stand on our own feet and look at the heavens are beckoning us. Instead of that, we re-clutch. That you do it only when you become the old age, when you can't depend upon yourself. What yourself concept? Self-dependent. Dependence of that self. You see, when you are able to do that, then you are you are only doing the, what is called, Swadharma. At that time, you have to realize that you are not different from Krishna. This is what happens. Swadharma, really, the meaning comes in the 18th chapter only. When Arjuna, who was deluded all the time, that he was different from Krishna. He has chosen rightly a warrior who is incapable to defeat, the warrior who is in within, whom we should allow to fight for us, because he is incapable to defeat, as the light of the path says. Therefore, he has chosen the charioteer, the Parthasarathi, Hare Krishna. But yet, after seeing the Siddha Prajna standing before him, he could not recognize Krishna. Then he came to 18th chapter, when he says, Snatto moho, Vitelagda, I have regained my consciousness, memory, my delusion is lost. The delusion was that he was separate from Krishna. When he understands that Krishna is none other than himself, then he realizes himself. That's what we are doing. As long as we have the separative tendencies in our mind, so long we cannot arrive at the inner self at all. We can't understand it. Much less carry out its behest. The moment we are able to surrender totally to the Lord within, what the Vaishnavas would call prapatti, then we will be able to carry out the behest of the Lord of the Parthasarathi. What we have done? We are running helter-skelter, driven by our karma, our passions and desires, isolated in Eiffel Tower. This is the problem today. We are going far, far away. By our selfishness, by a kind of education which promotes only competitiveness. First, second, and all the competitiveness. Is that right? What kind of education are we giving our children to? Making them selfish? All kinds of things are happening today. Please go to the article, HVP section on education. Children are our salvation. We should make them, yes, to stand on their own feet, become unselfish, to be loving and kindly towards all. Make them realize that the entire humanity is one brotherhood, one unity. If all of us are from the same source, and the one self which shines in all beings is the same, that my self is not different from other selves, then would there be any quarrel? In one of the Upanishads, beautifully it says, hope I'm able to get it. Let's see. See, the Ishavasya Upanishad, the very first verse says, the moment you surrender everything, then you can recognize God. All this whatsoever moves in this world, this moving world is pervaded by God. That is the omnipresence of deity. Through such renunciation, when it rounds everything, this is one of the aspects of mundane ceremony also, when you shave off, we are shaving off all non-essentials. Through such renunciation you may enjoy, do not covet for those for whose indeed is a wealth. Then, in another place it says, And he who sees all things in the self, and the self in all beings, he feels no hatred by virtue of that realization. Will he ever quarrel with another person? Will he become a murderer? A person who understands the whole humanity is one, that all of us are brothers and sisters, and therefore is able to orientate his thinking and carry out the realization of his oneness with the whole humanity. Then he will, yes, he will become a center, a powerful center, like-minded people will gather, and then from where spiritual influences can radiate. He himself in every case should become the center of attraction, where spiritual knowledge can radiate. Therefore, what is the duty of a theosophist? Duty of a theosophist, yes, that is also there in the key. To himself is to control and conquer the lower self to the higher. Yes. To control and conquer through the higher, the lower self. To purify himself inwardly and morally. To fear no one and not save the tribunal of his own conscience. Never to do a thing by halves. If he thinks it's the right thing to do, let him do it boldly and openly. And then, what is the duty of a man who is on his pilgrimage, soul pilgrimage? See, once you understand that, you see, all of our brothers and sisters, there is one human family, Vasudeva Kudumbakam, then you see, he will have time to think that he is separate from others. That is why it is stated to live to benefit mankind in the first place. We must realize we are here for a special purpose, to serve mankind, not for our own self-development. Therefore, duty is beautifully designed here. You see, duty is that we owe to humanity at large. If not by it, then we will become morally insolvent and spiritually insolvent and morally corrupt. This is what happens. That's what has happened to you. The moment you wake up, and of course it's difficult. People will say, yes, it's difficult to think about the abstract, the principle. Then the masters are there, the embodiments of the law of karma. The embodiments of, yes, the great sacrifice they have done, who have kept the knowledge ready for us, those who want it. Knock and it shall be open unto you. Ask and it shall be given unto you. But how do we ask? We ask only with the lustful mouth. Have we cleaned our mouth? Have we fit enough to speak that kind of a thing? Speech comes only with knowledge, says in the light of the path. Have we acquired knowledge? Spiritual knowledge. If you have acquired spiritual knowledge, having assimilated, can't go and be put into practice the universal brotherhood. Understand universal unity and causation, human solidarity. It's a fact in nature. This is the problem. Therefore, the movement, yes, instead of, if it is very difficult to ideate in the abstract principle, higher self, then seek the temperance of the masters. For the embodiment of every law, the great ones, think about their characteristics, their movements in the world, how they work amidst humanity, their compassion, love to humanity. See, if you are able to ideate, then also think, if the judge tells us various, gives various injections, suggestions in the letter that will help you, try to think before going to bed, you are not the God. You are not this mind, you are that very. And also, as soon as you wake up, you think like that. You're not this, you're not that, you're really that. Then, you see, realization by dwelling on the thought to be realized itself. It's not a mere repetition. You must make it, build it as your own fabric, with your fabric here. It should become your first nature. Then you will always keep in mind, at the back of your mind, yes, whatever I do, it must be in consonance with my higher self. Whatever I feel, whatever I do, and whatever I think. This is the whole problem. Once you have that, there is no need of protection. The Parthasarathis is all the time to protect us. Even in our sleep, deep sleep, that light of the one master is all the time showering on you. We'll close this with a quotation from Voice of the Silence. There are a couple of things also here. That is, with the war between the living and the dead goes on. Right from the day man became a thinking being. We have a quotation here. See, this war will last till the inner and divine man adjusts his outer terrestrial self to his own spiritual self. Till then, the dark and fierce passions of the former will be an eternal fluid, which is master, the divine man. But the animal will be tamed one day, that's in the next round, because his nature will be changed, and harmony will reign once more between the two as before the fall. The fall into generation. When even mortal man was created by the elements and was not gone, the same thing comes again. Man will become the free titan of old. We were giants, we were emanations of Jnani Buddhas. That's why we call Manasa Buddhas. Man will become the free titan of old, but not before cyclic evolution has re-established the broken harmony between the two natures, the terrestrial and the divine. Man is two. After which he becomes impermeable to the lower titanic forces, lower passions and desires, invulnerable in his personality and immortal in his individuality, which cannot happen before every animal element is eliminated from his nature. And see this. It's a very comforting thought. The light of the one master, the one unfading golden light of spirit, shoots its effulgent beams in the disciple from the very first. It's rays straight through the thick dark clouds of matter. Now here, now there, these rays illuminate like sun sparks light the earth through the thick foliage of the jungle growth. But O disciple, unless the flesh is passive, head cool, the soul as firm, as pure and flaming diamond, the radiance will not reach the chamber. How categorical. Radiance will not reach the chamber. If sunlight will not warm the heart, nor will the mystic sounds of the Akashic Heights reach the ear, however eager at the initial stage. We have about 3-4 minutes left for questions. How to explain this? You see, this is only a kind of a people. Their sophistication is only skin deep. They are still steeped in superstition and ritualism. See, I'm just challenging any person, please forgive me. Any person goes and does something and then nothing happens, or if it happens, can it be outside the law of karma? Just think about it. Nothing can happen outside the law of karma. See, the whole universe is one of dharma, that is law, rhythm. See, everything is based on the dharma. Then we are disturbing the dharma all the time when we think about ourselves and therefore all our actions are based and selfishness and separateness. We are not criticizing those people at all. We have no right. We have many people, yes, they have absolute faith. And some successes are due to the faith. Faith can move mountains. It's not as if there are failures. No, there are successes also. But that itself, the student says, is within the ambit of karma. Even if they had not gone, they would have succeeded. See, it happens as an instrument for them to carry itself. Therefore, I mean, we don't decry those people. Everyone has a right to do whatever he thinks best. He also, when he points out the way, it lays down the principle. It doesn't demand anyone to follow that. It's for each student to apply. See, the God within is here. That quotation we didn't read. See, it says here, look, he would do better far to remember that every man is a God with a directive of the Absolute. See, that is why Shankara says, Jivatma is none other than Paramatma. There is no difference at all, absolutely. But the Saguna Brahma, that is near Ishara, is a kind of, what shall I say, it's only a limited reflection of the one reality, to which we give all kinds of attributes. This is what Sarvapalli Radhakrishnan says in one of his commentaries. And then this is amply elaborated in the 10th chapter of the Gita, where he talks about divine vibhuti. What does it say? It ends with what? Let's just read that statement. It's wonderful. He says, but what, O Arjuna, has thus thou to do with so much knowledge as this? I established the whole universe, the single portion of myself, and it remains upon it. It's inexhaustible. I mean, otherwise why do you call it absolute? Infinite. I mean, it's everywhere. If it's everywhere, it's between, you know, all other gods and goddesses also. We have perhaps exceeded the time. It's one question if you have. Otherwise, we'll close this. Yes, there is one quotation which reminds me that we are all a race of the absolute, therefore, we have infinite capacities. This will be our last quotation. Yeah. Man, being the compound of the essences of those celestial hierarchies, may succeed in making himself as such superior in one sense to any hierarchical class or even the combination of them. That means we can raise ourselves above even Jnani Buddha as the celestial seven primary hierarchies. Man can neither propitiate nor command the devas, it is said, but by paralyzing his lower personality and arriving at there where the full knowledge of the non-separateness of his higher self from the one absolute self, man can, even during his terrestrial life, become as one of us. Thus it is by eating the fruit of knowledge which dispels ignorance that man becomes like one of the Elohim or the Dhyanis. And once at that plane, the spirit of solidarity and perfect harmony which reigns in every hierarchy must extend over him and protect him in every particular. This is the goal. This is where we should look for help. Thank you.